Anyam Home is a space where we can all engage about self-love, self-worth, relationships, trauma, and healing. I hope that you enjoy your stay, and I am your host, Tando. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Anyam Home. This is officially season 2. Thank you so much for coming back. Thank you for your messages. And also thank you for running up the previous episodes. I didn't think you guys would actually run them up, but the views are telling me that you guys were introspecting, reflecting, and doing all the work that we have been talking about. Also, don't forget to do the 7-day self-care challenge. It is still on my Instagram. You can do it at any time. And I would recommend you guys do it now since it's exam season and a lot of people are feeling fatigued. So get into it and take better care of yourself. This is the first episode of Men's Mental Health because November is dedicated to men. We are going to be exploring men and how they think and how they operate. And my guests are going to be men. So if you are trying to understand how men operate, this is going to be a good month. And we'll speak everything about how men can show up for themselves, how men can reconnect with themselves, their friends, and how men can be emotionally available. We did an episode with Mo on emotional availability and emotional intelligence. So we are following up from that. You guys seemed very interested. So we are going to be following up on that. And on today's episode, I am joined by Given. Given and I met on a space. And once again, thank you, Twitter, for the best feature on earth. We met on a space, Ask Him Spaces, hosted by Tiamo every Tuesday. And the conversation was surrounding relationships and how men show up in relationships. And I was very taken by Given's insights. So we are going to be carrying on that conversation on this podcast. Hey, Given, how are you?
I am good, thanks. And yourself, Tando?
I am really, really well. Thank you for joining me and thank you for being here today, making time and also just offering your insights and your wisdom. But before we get into it, I would like for you to introduce yourself to my listeners. Who are you and what do you like? What don't you like? Anything you want to tell us and how you're feeling about this particular episode?
First of all, thank you very much for having me. I think... It's not very often that people care about what I have to say. But my name is Given Kazeni. I am a 25-year-old digital media designer. I speak on spaces here and there on Twitter, which is probably where I think you heard me from.
Yeah.
And yeah, I tend to, you know, try and express myself the best way that I can, explain how I feel. Because I've come to realize that a lot of guys feel the same way, but probably don't know how to word it properly.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a really calm guy. There's nothing too wild about me or professional or, you know, I'm not a therapist or anything like that, but yeah.
Okay, thank you so much for that. We are going to be exploring a lot on your personal opinions. So I do like featuring very diverse people just to hear, you know, how people feel about certain things, because I realized that a lot of the times we think our perspective is final and is solid, but the more you speak to people and engage with people about their opinions, it opens up your eyes to how the world actually is. So I'm really interested in this conversation. And I think where I want to pick up this conversation is by posing a question to you surrounding why you think men struggle so much with opening up to those around them. It's very rare that men are okay with opening up, especially to romantic counterparts. It takes a lot for a man to trust someone else. And where do you think that stems from? Why do you think men just can't open up?
I think for the majority of the Black community, right, the African community, being a man has been aligned with being a provider, being someone who gets things done,
yeah.
Right? And being that person that needs to get things done, there's hardly any room for weakness. Because if you show weakness, then people associate that with inability to get things done, because weakness is seen as a distraction. It's weakness, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think a lot of men try and avoid showing weakness because, number one, it's not attractive to, you know, romantic partners. Number two, other men and other business partners and, you know, just getting anywhere in life, people don't want to associate themselves with weaklings. So you try and suppress that or hide it because you feel like it'll block your progression in life.
Yeah.
You know, the distraction that comes with weakness is just something that people would rather put aside than process because they feel that putting it aside, it's not something that needs to be dealt with, which is not true because these things tend to catch up with us with time. You know, so I think the reason why we as men struggle opening up to people is because it presents a sign of weakness and that can work against us, or at least we think so.
Yeah, I think I have picked up the whole pressure part that is placed on men. But do you also think that men don't give themselves the space to actually be vulnerable towards other people? Because I do assume that there are people who care, who genuinely care about what you have to say and how you feel. But because men have been conditioned to be a certain way and do certain things and to be the leader of the home and the leader in the spaces that they find themselves in, it's hard for them to disconnect from that pressure. So they keep applying that pressure on themselves, even when the environment doesn't apply that pressure anymore. Because if I am going into a partnership with a man, I'm expecting for the person to meet me halfway, right? So I'm not the one who's always carrying the emotional burden all the time. So do you think that there is some element of men not wanting to let go of that pressure?
I think for the most part, it is internalized. You know, I don't think it's something that comes from the outside. I don't think it's something that, you know, women aren't giving us the space to, or, you know, when it's just us, we in ourselves have just been conditioned to believe that, you know what, I can't show weakness and I can't show people that, you know what, I'm going through something, or, you know, I can't ask for help. People will see it as weakness. And the reality is that, you know what, I think for the most part, everyone understands that people go through things. Yes. So I think it's just us who need to unlearn the, what's the word? The conditioning. We need to unlearn the conditioning. You know what? There's no one for us. There's no one to help us. And we have to get through emotional things on our own. And we can't seek out help because it will be used against us. And because I know that a lot of men like hiding behind the fact that, you know what? If I expose my weakness or if I open up to my woman or my romantic partner, they're going to use it against me one day and, you know, they're going to put out my secrets. And honestly speaking, that happens way too rarely for it to actually be a concerning factor for the majority of Black men.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It does happen. It does happen where people weaponize your shortcomings or your pain or, you know what I mean? It does happen, but I don't think that it happens often enough for us to validate us hiding things from our partners or from our friends or anything like that. It's not the main reason why we don't open up. The main reason why we don't open up is because we don't want to be seen as weak.
That's so true, because I think a lot of the women that I have spoken to, even on previous episodes, have said that they tend to be emotionally supportive towards men. And I think inherently as women, we do step into that position of being the nurturer and we care a lot and we overextend ourselves. And often when, you know, people make threads on Twitter, it's always, yeah, I could have left early, but I just wanted to just give this person more time. Maybe they were going to open up and stuff like that. And then a man tells his story and he related back to when he was in high school that this one person did this to them. And I mean, by the time you're like 21, there's so much for you to have unlearned by then. And you should be in a position to trust people more. But drawing from what you were saying, when you say a lot of men feel like this and they act like this, then why aren't men coming together as a group to navigate and to find ways in which they can work around this? Because there's an opportunity to build support.
To be honest, I do think that a lot of men do come together in their friend groups and workspaces, maybe not as much, but mostly friend groups, they do come together and try and support each other. With that said, I think we tend to look at the male ego and think that it's completely aligned with women, right? Or romantic partners.
Mm-hmm.
But if you think about it, pretty much everything that we tend to associate with impressing women is pretty much to impress our friends and the men around us as well.
Yes.
Because if you think about driving a fancy car, right? As much as yes, maybe you want to impress the women around you, but it's also to get that validation from men to say, oh, okay, yeah, this guy's made it in life. You know, this guy's getting that girl. This guy's living. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So there's a lot of pressure with amongst men themselves, you know, to show that, you know, they've got it all together and everything is fine. And that's why you'll always find out that, you know, someone has problems at home or, you know, has problems with their wives or whatever, but whenever they meet up with the guys, then it's, yeah, I've got everything together. Things are good at home. And, you know, I've got it all figured out. So I think amongst men, there is a lot of pressure. There is a lot of lying. You know, there is a lot of pretense to make it seem as if, you know, they've got it all together. And once you've got a setting like that, it's very difficult to have progressive conversations and to open up, because if everyone's lying to each other, then you can't really have conversations that matter.
Yeah.
You can't really say, okay, you know what, let me help you in 1, 2, 3, because you're not telling me the truth to begin with.
Yes.
So that's a problem that I've seen, at least amongst some of my social circles, where people aren't really giving the full story of what's going on in their lives. So we can't really help each other like that, because if you're not willing to ask for help or to let people know that there is a problem, then you're unlikely to get the help that you need.
And do you think how we were raised actually plays part in that? So a man who was raised in a household full of women is more trusting as opposed to in a household full of men, because I think women would teach you a lot about your emotions and how to be. And I see this with my guy friends. The ones who were raised around women a lot are more willing to, you know, tell me the full story, or more willing to reach out first to say, hey, I need help. But the ones who are either the only child or raised around men tend to put up this facade of being strong, of having everything together. So do you think how we were raised ultimately plays a big role in how we function in society at a later point?
I think, firstly, I don't think it's necessarily a facade, because if you're raised around a group of men who are hyper masculine, I don't think you're pretending, you know, because that's all you know.
Yeah.
That's all you've been exposed to. So when you go into the outside world as an adult and you're mixing with other people, that's all you can give off, because that's all you've really experienced growing up.
Yes.
Whereas if you're raised in a household with just women, then yeah, you are exposed to a lot of, you know, emotion and opening up. And so I would say that it does play a very large role in your upbringing, does play a very large role in how you present yourself. But I think that it really just boils down to you and what type of person you are, because, you know, it's very possible for someone to be raised in an all-female household and reject that because of external factors, like, you know, maybe I don't want to show too much femininity, or if I show too much emotion, then, you know, I'm going to be considered feminine or anything like that. That hypermasculinity will then kick in because of the environment that you grew in. You know what I mean? It does happen where someone who was raised in an all-female household rejects all of that and is like, you know what? No, I need to be masculine. I need to, you know, show that I'm a man. And that then activates a certain level of hypermasculinity, because now you're not just being yourself. You're actively trying to prove that you're masculine because you've only been exposed to femininity and just being around women. So I do think that it plays a very large role, but it just boils down to the type of man that you are and the type of man that you want to be. So I don't think that, okay, no, it goes both ways. It goes both ways. It can either affect you positively or negatively.
Yeah. So what I'm getting from what you're saying is that men have the agency over how their life actually turns out. So there could be someone who makes the decision that they don't want to be closed off and don't want to not be approachable or have the ability to approach their partner or their friends and actually take the time to learn how to become a better person. And then there could be someone who says, I have experienced all that I've experienced and I need to close myself off to that so I don't experience that trauma ever again. So it depends basically on where you are and how you feel about the situation that you were in and what you're willing to do about that situation. I think this goes for any person, any environment that you've been in. Perspective is what ultimately makes you the person that you are and the person that you will become, because we don't look at things the same way. But I think it's so important for a lot of men to really unlearn the things that they were taught that are keeping them in the same space, because if you are not able to open up to people around you, you rarely ever cultivate relationships that are healthy. And you know, it's always like, okay, fine, when you are in the space with your bros, it's all happy, but then when you are in need of help, there's no one that like comes up to your mind first thing that you can ask for help, because you haven't cultivated those kind of relationships. And even when you speak
you haven't really given yourself the opportunity to look for help. And if you can't look for help with the people around you, then it's highly unlikely that you'll open up to, say, for example, a therapist. You know what I mean? Someone who you don't know completely. Because the way I look at therapy is that you can open up to the people around you, because, you know, people all have different experiences, different levels of wisdom and so on. So you can open up to the people around you. And if you see that they can't really help you the way that you need to be helped, then you can then seek a more professional level of help through therapy. You know, so if you can't open up to the people around you, it's highly unlikely that you'll give a therapist a chance. You know what I mean? So I just feel like there's certain steps that should be taken, and skipping those steps becomes very difficult. So it needs to be a process. You open up to the people around you, you open up to your partner, and if there's things that they can't resolve through their experience or help you resolve rather, then you can then start looking at things like therapy. But you can't jump straight to therapy without opening up to the people around you, because it just becomes very difficult. Because your reasons for not opening up to the people around you will still be there when it's time to open up to a complete stranger.
Yeah. And I was actually about to ask about therapy, because I think there's a stigma around going to therapy in the African community, because we don't understand mental illness the way we're meant to understand it at this point in time. And so there's a lot of I don't know, like word around why somebody would be going to therapy. I believe in going to therapy in every phase of your life, because you always need that anchor, and a therapist could be that anchor, whether you're overwhelmed, doing really well, trying to manage your life, going into a different phase in your life. But I genuinely feel like there's so much stigma around Black men going to therapy. And if you look at the suicide rates are higher amongst Black men than they are. And that goes to show that men don't seek for help, men don't go to therapy. But what do you think we need to actively do to encourage people to go to therapy? Because I know there are a lot of campaigns that encourage men to go to therapy, but what in our own circles can we do? What can, as the normal day-to-day person, me, what can I do for the men in my life and for people who maybe I interact with, to encourage them to seek help, to go to therapy, and also opening them up to channels where they can actually find the help that they need?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think the general problem that Black people have with therapy is the stigmas that come with it. You know, that only people who are down and out, you know, need to go to therapy. Only people who can't cope on their own, you know. And unfortunately, looking from the outside, you can look at someone and be like, okay, you know what, this person is going through it and this person needs therapy. But when it comes to internalizing and looking at yourself and realizing that, you know what, I need help, it's a much more difficult process to go through, because we know, or we've been taught, that you should have it all together. It's very difficult to admit that, you know what, I don't. So the first step is being honest with yourself to say that, you know what, I don't have it all together and I need help. So that is the most important part. Because if you can't get yourself to be honest and admit that, you know what, there's a problem and it needs solving, then and even forget about even thinking as far as therapy. Because if someone's not going to admit to themselves that they have a problem and they need help, then they're not going to open up to anyone. We need to create an environment where therapy isn't looked down upon, or people who go to therapy, rather, aren't looked down upon. A situation whereby, I think it also just boils down to mental health. You know, we tend to think that if you're not schizophrenic or if you aren't completely depressed, then your mental health is perfect. Yes. You know what I mean? Yet mental health is a process. You know, you don't just jump from happy to sad. It's a process where things keep happening and your mental health keeps deteriorating and deteriorating until you become depressed. So what we need to realize is that you need to try and figure out or accept that you need help before you hit rock bottom. And as someone from outside trying to help someone else realize that, it's very difficult. I think the one thing that you can do as someone who's trying to get through to the men in your life, just try and change the stigma around therapy and around mental health, and encourage conversations where people will introspect, you know, and look at themselves and say, you know what, maybe I also need help. Or, you know, just try and have the difficult conversations that people will avoid. Because trust me, as soon as you bring up mental health, you bring up the word mental health, people already close off.
Yes.
You know what I mean? So just try and ask difficult questions. You know, the how are you doing questions don't work, because people will just shrug it off with I'm fine. I think it depends on the level of comfort that you are with the people in your life. You can ask questions like, what have you been struggling with recently? You know, it's a difficult question, and I think it would need to be phrased properly, but that would then make someone think that, okay, you know what, I've been going through this and this and this, I've been struggling with this and this and this, be it work, emotional, whatever it is, you know. If you find out what someone's struggling with, then they're more likely to open up. Because you find out that, okay, they're struggling at work. Okay, what about work is giving you stress? You know, and that way, that person might be more likely to open up. Then you can then suggest that, hey, man, you know, I might not have the answers, but have you considered therapy? You know, and then I think that's probably just the best way to introduce it, to make someone realize that there is a problem and then provide a solution, rather than just say, hey, go to therapy. You know what I mean? If someone realizes that, okay, damn, I might actually need help, then they're more likely to open up to the idea of therapy.
I completely agree with what you're saying. So creating that safe environment for people to actually speak, I also really think it boils down to the language that we use. So we are so free with saying things like, I feel so depressed today, oh, you're so OCD, my friend is bipolar today, because like they have mood swings. And I think switching from that language to language that is correct in that sentence would help a lot of people and will put back the significance of like the meaning for like depression, bipolar, OCD. So instead of saying things like you're so OCD, like saying you're pedantic and I'm sad today, I'm angry, I'm feeling down, as opposed to saying I'm depressed, because then everyone just feels like, oh, okay, it's just one of those things, you know, you just get over them, and it removes the significance from the actual mental illness. So going back to how we use the language and going back to when we speak about certain things, I think also asking the question, how are you genuinely, in a setting where the person is comfortable. So I can't ask you, how are you genuinely when we're just, I mean, watching series or distracted by something?
Yeah,
so creating... Sorry,
I'll cut you off there, sorry.
Oh, okay, no problem. So creating that environment and being very intentional with creating that specific environment helps a lot with making a person really comfortable. And I think families should be the main contributor to a person's well-being. So parents, new parents, I know our age group, we are approaching that time where we are having kids, we are raising families, everyone is getting married. And so I think, time has gone by so quickly. We were in primary school not so long ago, but we are going to be the parents. So I think it's so important we're having these conversations so that we don't pass on our trauma to our kids, and we ensure that the environment we raise our kids in is very safe for them, because we know how it is to grow up with trauma. We know how it is to not be able to ask for help. We know how it is to be invalidated. So we are trying to break those curses, and we're trying to break that cycle to make sure that we raise a generation of kids who are able to say, hey, listen, I don't appreciate what you did, and we apologize and we move on. So in that way, there's less need for us having to create these safe spaces every single day, because that's the nature in which we exist, and the space is safe enough for the kids to speak. But before, you know, we close it off, I want to touch bases with your own personal life, what it is that you actively do to take care of your mental well-being, how you find, you know, the ways to navigate days where you feel like you're down and out, and how you cultivate healthier relationships with other people. What exactly is it that works for you, and what doesn't work for you?
I grew up as someone who tried as often as possible to process things on my own, because I always told myself that I didn't want to burden people, and I didn't want to be, you know, I don't think it was a matter of weakness. It was just more of people have their own things that they're going through. And, you know, if I can handle things on my own, then they don't have to stress about me. You know, so growing up and for the longest time, I always tried to do things on my own. And eventually I came to realize that, you know what, I can't. Something very big happened in my life, and I realized that, okay, I needed the help. I needed to let people in. So what I actively started doing is that I stopped waiting for people to create a safe environment for me. I would pick people in my life, be it my sister or, you know, really close friends who I trusted, and I would go to them and say, hey, listen, dude, I'm going through 1, 2, 3. And I just wondered how you would handle it, you know, because I felt that my mental health would do a lot better if I realized that people related, you know. Yes. So I think I found solace in the fact that, you know, people are going through the same things, because most of the times when I'd go to someone and be like, dude, I'm going through this, how would you handle it? The response that I'd get would be, oh, damn, dude, I'm also going through that. Or yes, I went through something similar last year. You know what I mean? So I think being proactive and actively reaching out to people so that I could hear their stories and relate kind of made it easier for me to then open up to more people, because then I realized that, you know what, I'm not going through this alone. Because I think a large contributor to the fact that men aren't opening up, and people in general, is that we think our problems are unique. We think we're the only ones going through these things, and other people have it easy because most people are pretending anyway, especially in the times of social media where people can live a completely different life online to their real life. And if you don't distinguish between the two, you can get lost thinking that everyone has everything figured out because they're not sharing their L's on the timeline.
Yes. You know
what I mean? So what I do, and what I've done recently actually, is that when people host spaces about, you know, the things that they go through and so on, I just go on and listen. And that kind of helps me realize that, you know what, maybe what I'm going through might not be that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? People do have problems out there, and I'm not the only one. And that kind of made me realize that, you know what, I'm not weird. I'm not a problem. I'm not you know, different. Everyone is going through something. And once I started accepting that, it then made it easier for me to open up to the people around me, because I realized that, you know what, once I open up to them, they'll probably open up to me, and we'll both realize that we're both going through stuff and give each other solutions. So I think what helped me most, what helped me most is realizing that other people also are going through things and that my problems aren't unique. So I actively look for people to open up to and share things with, because they tend to do the same.
Yeah. And spaces, I will always say this, spaces have created a platform for people to speak. I don't know what we were doing before spaces, but it's so amazing. It's so amazing to go into a space with around like 1K people and everyone is just taking turns speaking about their own experiences, and someone else in the audience is giving advice, and we're finding ways to deal with our problems. I believe in speaking about your problems, finding people that you trust. You know
what I
think
the difference was? Sorry to cut you off, but I think what the difference was is that before spaces, we were limited to, 240 characters, 240 characters.
Yes.
And in those 240 characters, it was very difficult to give context. And the thing about conversations, right, is that I let you speak. Once you've spoken, I can get the entire context of what you're saying, and then I respond. Whereas on Twitter, you only have 240 characters, which you have to break up into, which means that you have to break your conversation up into a thread. And now the problem with that is that people don't go through the entire thread. People read certain tweets in the thread and then decide what they want to respond to without the entire context. Yes. So now the conversation shifts from your main point to the one tweet which is off, or the one tweet which people want to attack. You know what I'm saying? So conversations aren't progressive in the timeline because people aren't responding to the context of what you're saying. They're responding to that specific tweet, which might come off as offensive or wrong, or, you know what I mean? So correct. Spaces then allow a platform where people can actually speak and finish before someone responds to the entire thing. And obviously, you know, you do get people who speak over you and a lot of chaotic spaces, but if it's run well, you really do have an opportunity where people can actually share their entire thoughts without being interrupted. So I think that's the major key with spaces, is that it allows people to actually speak and get their point across without the limit of 240 characters.
Right. So I think then that kind of brings us to, you know, the answer that I've been looking for, like, what can we do? And it's speak more, find people to speak to, find people who you can trust. And even if it is a stranger, speak about the things that you're bottling and ensure that you are seeing things from a different perspective. Because when you keep those things within yourself, you are the only person who is giving you advice. But now when you start speaking more to other people, you get different perspectives and you realize that actually this is something I can handle and this is something I can deal with. And someone has gone through this, which means I will be able to go through it. And there's always someone who is willing to listen, always someone who's willing to create that space for you. But I think that's where we are going to end episode one. I hope you guys now understand better how you can show up for yourself if you are a man, and how you can show up for a man in your life if you do have one in your life, or your brothers or your fathers, whoever the man figure in your life. I will see you guys in a different episode. But before we close, Given, can you give us your social media handles if you are on Instagram? I know you're on Twitter. So can you give us your Instagram and your Twitter?
My social media is really just my name and surname, Given Kazeni, at Given Kazeni, G-I-V-E-N-K-E-N-I.
Okay, perfect. So I will leave the links just to make it easier for everyone. But thank you so, so much for joining me. And I wish you well in, you know, the remaining days of this year. We will speak again. And to everyone who made it this far, Thank you so much, guys. I really, really appreciate it. We are nearing the end of the year, and I hope you guys are taking care of yourself, especially those who are in a really stressed environment or like stressful environment. Do something for yourself that will ensure that your days are a little bit easier. But till next time, thank you for your time. Goodbye.